You're listening to TASH Amplified, a podcast that seeks to transform research and experience concerning inclusion and equity for people with disabilities into solutions people can use in their everyday lives. Today we're talking with Amy Peterson, Associate Professor of Special Education at the University of Northern Iowa. We are discussing her article, Perspectives of Special Education Teachers on General Education Curriculum Access, Preliminary Results, from the March 2016 issue of Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities. Professor Peterson, would you introduce yourself for our listeners? What is your background, and how did you come to your current research?
Yes. My name is Amy Peterson, and I am an associate professor at the University of Northern Iowa here in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and I coordinate a minor program within our Department of Special Education that prepares teachers to educate students with significant cognitive disabilities. And within this minor program, I teach a number of the method courses, as well as some graduate coursework in this area as well. And I happen to work very closely with our State Department of Education to provide supports and professional development to our teachers who are also out in the field. And over the course of probably the last 7 years or so, I have worked with our State Department and our teachers who are currently providing services to students with significant cognitive disabilities around curricular access, particularly relating to literacy practices. And this work has involved a tremendous amount of professional development to help better prepare our teachers who are out there in the field to provide good, high-quality literacy instruction to students with significant cognitive disabilities. And so my research focuses on academic curricular access, inclusive education, advocacy, and disability studies in education. And so this current article came out of my work in collaboration with our State Department and my work with our teachers across the state of Iowa.
Tell us about your study in the current issue of Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities.
This study is a qualitative exploration of the experiences and perspectives of those educators across our state as they work to create and facilitate and support curricular access for students with significant cognitive disabilities. A bit of background about this study. Our field has experienced a number of significant changes relating to how we educate students with significant disabilities. Our expectations, for example, are much higher than, say, a decade ago. We now expect that students with significant cognitive disabilities will learn academic skills such as literacy, and these expectations have changed the roles and responsibilities of our teachers who are providing special education services. And so this article explores that current landscape or context in an effort to understand the dispositions, the skills, the content knowledge that our teachers possess, and as that knowledge relates to how they provide and support and facilitate academic curricular access. And one of the goals of the study was that we might, as a state, better understand how these teachers might be best supported given the recent changes within our field, as well as thinking about considerations for the field as we continue to move forward.
There have been a number of stories in the national media about growing teacher shortages. And one of the reasons these articles have identified is that the demands on teachers, from state-level standards to Common Core, to No Child Left Behind testing requirements, the alternative assessment, the requirements of individualized education programs, are simply too high. What resources do you think are necessary to help teachers adapt to these demands?
This is a great question. And I might first respond by suggesting that, in fact, these new demands are not necessarily too high, they certainly do stretch our field and stretch the resources of schools and districts across our state as well as across the nation. And many of the results that emerged from my study pointed to a tremendous amount of confusion around curriculum access and what we mean by curricular access, as well as challenges around supporting curricular access and the logistics involved with supporting curriculum access, including the need for greater collaboration and communication in order to support curricular access well. And so I think one of the challenges is not merely that our expectations are too high, but rather we have a system that is being tested by these evolving expectations. And so it reveals holes, if you will, within our system and areas that we certainly need to address. And so I think for teachers in particular, if we do not as a system pay attention to their concerns and their challenges and the needs that emerge when we have really high expectations and when we are attempting to teach students who may not speak typically or may struggle, very typical academic content, then we need to really take those concerns to heart and think about how our structures within our system perhaps prevent teachers from doing the work that they need to do. So for example, let me just share one of the findings from the research. I had many teachers who were very willing to think about how they might go about providing curricular access. But one of the challenges they faced is that they might not possess the content expertise that they felt was needed in order to provide high quality instruction. And so they very much desired to communicate and collaborate and to plan with their general education peers. However, the structures within their school district, within their building, did not provide the time for them to do that. And so I think when we look at the resources that teachers need in order to adapt to these demands, we have to think about how we can restructure our system so that we can create opportunities for general education and special education teachers to work together. And we need to take a look at how we schedule classes and some of those structural barriers that potentially could be eliminated or reworked in order to create possibilities so that teachers can do the work that they really do desire to do.
One of the issues that you write about a lot in the article is how teachers struggle to integrate the multiple standards they need to meet: the individualized education programs, Common Core, the alternative assessment. What specific help do you think teachers need to perform this curriculum design and planning function?
I think teachers require a great deal of professional development around how these various aspects of a student's educational programming align and inform in order for teachers to deliver high quality instruction. So the teachers that participated in this study, many of them had not previously provided academic instruction. They often approached the services that they provided as being necessary for them to deliver instruction related to their students' specific IEP goals. And or for the purposes of assessment, they may have provided very specific assessment around what they believed would be on the assessment. And then they might have layered in some general education content if they had time. And so they predominantly saw their instruction in a very fragmented way. And so one of the needs that emerged from the study is to provide professional development to help teachers understand how instruction, assessment, and a student's individualized education program align and how these pieces fit together and should ideally inform one another. And so we would hope to work with teachers around lesson planning, for example, to help them understand how very specific individualized student IEP goals might be embedded within the context of a literacy lesson, and how teachers could then also collect data during instruction that might inform the next day's instruction, as well as provide progress monitoring for a student's IEP goal. And then certainly these two aspects would inform the alternate assessment, and that alternate assessment information, I think here in the very near future within our state, is going to be incredibly helpful as it does a much better job in providing useful information as teachers work to continue to plan for instruction.
What should we be thinking about with the reauthorizations of the Every Student Succeeds Act and the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act potentially being negotiated in the upcoming congressional session?
I think what I would love to see is that we continue to have high expectations, and that we continue to hold our system accountable for student learning. However, I do hope for perhaps a different kind of accountability. I think my research has revealed that teachers certainly desire to provide high quality instruction, but often they do not have the supports or the resources or the structures to do so. And when we think about the reauthorization of each of these pieces of legislation, I would like to see us think about how we hold school districts and administrators accountable for the resources and supports that their teachers need in order to be successful. And that when we think about student growth, that we think about just that, student growth, as opposed to mastering at a particular percentile, if you will. And I would also like to see us really pay attention to the concerns and needs of teachers on a very individualized basis, if you will. And so if we think about giving greater control over to local districts and schools to think about their contextual needs and to think about what might work best for them given the environment that they teach and work within, while we continue to see legislation that shares the common goal of equity and opportunity for all students.
You also do work on improving the level of parental involvement in the Individualized Education Program Conference. Would you tell us about that work?
Yes. So I spend a great deal of my time working with parents who have students who are receiving special education services. And these parents typically are interested in improving the services that their students receive. And so, of course, I recognize that those services come about as a result of the individualized education program planning meeting. And one of the things that I like to do is to help school districts facilitate more productive meetings. So often when parents come to me, they are frustrated because they may feel as though they have not had a voice in the process, or they have not had an opportunity to share, you know, their ideas around their student. And so one of the things I do is suggest that I help facilitate such a meeting. And one of the first things that I do in that facilitation is to request of the school district not to bring a draft of that IEP document to the meeting. What I have found when districts bring a draft of that document to the meeting, often they begin by reading that draft to the parents. And when that happens, it has the effect of closing down the conversation. We know the research tells us that the language of special education can be incredibly intimidating, incredibly wordy. We know there are acronyms that parents don't understand. And when a school district shifts into reading a drafted document to parents, parents struggle to understand that document. And often, because they do not want to create ripples, if you will, or offend the educator sitting around the table, they feel it is difficult at that point to contribute to the document because the document's already been written or drafted, if you will. Their contribution at that point requires them to essentially disagree with whatever has been drafted, and it can be incredibly difficult for parents to do that. And so my suggestion is always that we begin without a draft. And then I work through a process where we take a look at student strengths, the dreams that we have for the student, that we involve the student in this conversation, and we begin to ask the question, you know, what would we like the student to do a year from now? What can the student do now? And then moving into what resources and supports and accommodations are necessary if we are to realize this dream of a year from now? And how might we then even imagine 5 years from now? Always returning to the supports and the resources that are necessary. And I have found that in facilitating such meetings around these questions and really requiring a round robin approach to contributions, where we go around and we hear from all meeting participants, there's greater investment on everyone's part. And so general education teachers have the opportunity to talk about expectations within their classrooms, what may or may not work as it relates to accommodations, and we all leave the meeting with some general consensus, if you will, and parents feel as though they have had an opportunity to participate in a very authentic way. And of course, when I first proposed this process with schools, there is always some hesitation that a meeting might go multiple hours or that special education teachers will not feel prepared, that they're not doing their job if they do not bring a draft to the meeting. But in fact, I encourage all meeting participants to bring data, and for special education teachers often to coordinate the gathering of data by sharing a graphic organizer or, you know, a particular set of questions with meeting participants prior so everyone can come prepared. And so it's in this work that I think parents have the opportunity to have their voices heard. And I think bringing it back to really the article that we are discussing today and some of the challenges within our field, that IEP meeting is really, for me, the hub of everything else. And so if we are thinking about how can we create curricular access and we're thinking about what resources teachers might need, those kinds of conversations should be occurring, you know, at the IEP meeting, and it should be a conversation as opposed to educators reading a document to parents.
What should family members who are going into an IEP conference, or maybe in the larger perspective, to a school board meeting or into a voting booth know?
you know, I always encourage, whether it be parents or educators or administrators, to first be a critical consumer of the world around them. And by that I mean to ask some really hard questions about what is occurring in schools and why it is occurring in schools. And in asking those hard questions, to seek the perspectives of many individuals, because I think that can be most helpful as we continue to plan and to move forward and to ensure that we provide everyone with opportunity and teachers with the supports that they need. I, of course, always encourage parents to know their rights. And that sounds very common sense-like, but unfortunately, most parents are handed, you know, the procedural safeguard manual, and it is quite large, and it is difficult to understand. And so I find that if we can support the knowledge of parents by providing some kind of supplemental cheat sheet around their rights, parents can be much better informed about how they might participate in the process. And when I think about the larger picture, I really believe that if we are to ensure that all students have equity of opportunity and a high quality education, that we certainly need to solicit the allyship, if you will, of others who may not be directly involved in the education of students with disabilities, but who can also ask really hard questions, such as, you know, why are students with disabilities not in the same classrooms as my students? And they can be also the voice that asks hard questions about equity and opportunity within our schools. And so I think really encouraging collaboration across a multitude of audiences and asking everyone to be a critical consumer, whether it be in the IEP meeting or at the voting booth, is how we, you know, move this kind of work forward.
Where can teachers and also family members who are interested learn more?
You know, I saw this question and I thought to myself, well, TASH, of course. Most states have a local TASH organization, and I have found here in my local community that parents who can connect with the local TASH community have an opportunity to talk to others about the issues and the challenges and the celebrations that they may have around their student. And the local TASH chapters also often provide professional development opportunities for educators as well as parents. And it really provides the setting in which the collective work can be undertaken. And so I would encourage all parents to check out both the national TASH organization, but also the local TASH in their community. And then also look toward your institutes of higher education. I know here in our community, we do a tremendous amount of service work. We are very interested in connecting with our local educators, our representatives, our Department of Education, in order to really understand the context of the field with which we work, but also in the effort to transform that context. And so I think parents and educators certainly should look to their institutes of higher ed for additional supports and information.
Professor Amy Peterson, thank you for taking the time today to help us understand some of the workings of schools and educators. You've been listening to TASH Amplified. For more about the series, including show notes, links to articles discussed, a complete transcript, and a schedule of episodes updated as they become available, visit tash.org/amplified. You can subscribe through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app to have the series delivered automatically to your device so you never miss an episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a rating for us on our iTunes page. Today's episode featured a researcher from our scholarly journal, Research and Practice for Persons with Severe Disabilities. To learn more about RPSD, you can visit the publisher website, rps.sagepub.com. You or your organization can subscribe there. Also, RPSD, including web access to the entire 40 years of previous issues, is available to TASH professional and organizational members, as well as select reduced memberships. To become a member and receive RPSD, visit tash.org/join. TASH is a values and research-based advocacy association located in Washington, D.C., with local chapters covering 18 states. In 2015, we celebrated our 40th anniversary. We offer organization, advocacy, collaboration, scholarship, and education for people with disabilities, researchers, educators, service providers, and family members. In addition to research and practice for persons with severe disabilities, we offer a member magazine, Connections, a series of regional conferences, and our annual conference. You can learn more about TASH at TASH.org. You can receive updates from TASH on this podcast and our other activities by following us on Facebook or on Twitter at TASHTweet. This has been a sample of the colleagues and conversations available through TASH. It is only because of the excellent work that our members do that we can bring you this information. For more resources such as this, and to become a member, visit tash.org/join. We'll hear from another outstanding advocate again in 2 weeks.